Hello, everybody. So we had an absolutely amazing service prep. Thank you for all of you that were there and generated the substance together. Okay, so this is the plan. We are wanting to talk about things happen, crisis, challenges, confusion, chaos, and how do we bring that still, calm presence in the midst of that for ourselves and for others, bring love and understanding in the midst of those types of situations. And Angelica brought up the beautiful point that it's assurance, which is in Yoronda's Seven Steps to the Temple of Light. And so we're going to start our time with her sharing that piece from Yoronda about assurance. And then we're going to hear from Diana and Adam and Katie and Gary and myself. And so we're going to speak shorter times than we normally do at a service. And then at the end, I want to save some time so that anybody can speak to those themes that we're talking about, to sort of bring everybody's voice in that has something to share. So as you're listening to other people who may be sharing experiences and as well as thoughts about it all, and your own thoughts are moving and shaking in you, just know that there's an opportunity at the end for you to say a few words if you want. And you know, not that you have to speak for a lengthy time or anything, but just to share something from your heart and your own thinking. And it would be wonderful to hear from whoever wants to do that. So, Angelica, dear, please come and share about assurance.
Hello, everybody. Everybody's so beautiful tonight. I love the seven steps of the Temple of Light from Yoronda. I love a lot of his teachings because they're always, to me, so full of truth and love. And it's basically the essence that our ranch has been built upon. I like the seven steps because there are times where I get lost in my head and I think everything's going wrong and no foundation seem to be in the place that I thought that warrants were. And I love the seven steps because it's just a very simple way to kind of get back into the center of orientation of truth and love and know everything. It's just, if you just stay in orientation and believe in the power of the divine, it's all going to work out. And so one of the chapters that popped into my head that I love is chapter 4, Assurance, although I do recommend reading all of the seven steps if you haven't done so already. But it is on assurance. So, assurance relates to the outer man's first direct cognition of the presence of inner being, and this is that which is born of realization and is feathered by radiance. When separateness ceases and oneness is realized, assurance is certain, for the blessed one knows that all things are, and in full response to the wonderful one within, the outer man acts with the consciousness of divine being. Here is that which allows perfect expression according to the perfect plan. For in it is which is called faith. Absolute assurance is ever known by the blessed one who abides in the presence of the wonderful one, but it cannot be known by such as have not realized the presence. In such assurance, every act is in accordance with the perfect law, which cannot fail. And every word expressed in such assurance will surely accomplish that whereunto it is sent. He who has entered into assurance knows what faith is, but he who has not entered in knows not the spirit of faith, but the letter only, and this is of no effect. Inner assurance is absolute, unwavering, centered in the eternal law of being, without doubt and action, without fear and thought, and without uncertainty, that which is. In assurance, there is no lack nor limitation. For the vision is not limited to that which is seen by mortal eye or known by mortal mind. Inner assurance comes not from the outer mind's attempts to use so-called willpower, nor is it to be found in endless repetitions of so-called affirmations, for the only source of such assurance is the wonderful one within. When the outer mind has let go of all its desires and wants and is absorbed by tranquility, and out of tranquility comes the realization of the presence of the wonderful one. When the presence is known, the fullness of all things is found to be in that presence, and from this conviction is the wonderful one comes assurance. Blessed is the one who thus lets go and abides in the presence, for he has learned to let love radiate. And I would like to introduce Diane.
Thank you, Angelica. There are so many thoughts, aren't there, that move through our hearts and minds, even just in listening to what Angelica read. So much opportunity for allowing the richness of spirit to pass through this wonderful facility we call our body, our mind, and our spirit, our heart. Our lives are filled with a lot of variety. Some of it comfortable, and some of it uncomfortable. And Uma mentioned in the introduction, we have opportunity often to handle crisis. And being able to come to a point of stillness takes some work. It doesn't always, the stillness doesn't always happen all at once, especially if one is ruffled. And I was telling a story of my experience last night, where I woke up in the middle of the night and there was something. I'd gone to sleep with it, actually, but it was sort of more in the background in my head, and I felt just really troubled by what I was thinking about. And it went round and round and round and wasn't going anywhere. And I picked up a paper of Martin's that happened to be on my nightstand. And it was on sanctification. I got, oh, wow, I hadn't thought of that for years. This has sort of been one of the, sanctification has been one of the basic ways of allowing oneself to come into stillness. And that is done by giving thanks, by particularly, for instance, in the evening before you go to sleep and you're just about to let those eyes close and nod off, you review your day, all of it, the comfortable and the uncomfortable, the spectacular and the very simple or the mundane, and bless it all. Consider it. Consider it. Sometimes, you know, take a moment on that uncomfortable moment, that exchange you had with something, somebody that had fire in it or whatever it was, or that somebody said something to you and your heart was deeply hurt. Taking a moment to just let that all come to a certain point of rest. Maybe that piece that I was mulling around didn't all resolve in that moment. In fact, I know it didn't. And often it isn't. Because what happens in the time of sleep is the beautiful thing that the conscious mind is at rest. And there's a chance for other things, the subconscious, the connection with our source, to be enlivened, and things shift and change during the night. Healing takes place at the physical level, but also mentally and emotionally. Shifts take place. Maybe something comes into consciousness that we're not aware yet. And when the waking up comes, oh, it feels different. Mm-hmm. Ah, wonder what that, and I found this happened this morning, after I'd spent some time going over this particular thing that I was wooling around, something was different. The atmosphere around it wasn't totally resolved, but it was, you know, it was different. And I felt this sense of peace and wonder and willingness to understand more. There'll be more to look at in this whole thing for me yet. But a certain partial resolution took place. And I just found myself so filled with thankfulness for the opportunity of remembering, I used to do that all the time, and what happened? And you realize, bring the tools of the kingdom back. Let them be remembered. Let them be used wisely. Because sometime, probably in your day, there will be opportunity to use those wonderful tools. And I did have a couple of circumstances where I did use them, not even knowing they were coming, and taking advantage of the opportunity to let spirit flow. Yeah, because that's what happened. There's new space, and there's room then for this flow to happen, this connection into whatever one's working with in your world. It's magical. And the right word comes out, the right moment, the healing can be offered, because one's done some healing oneself. We have so much we can do as individuals because of the tools we have in our EDL context that we've consciously worked with over the years that can be a continued blessing throughout our days with our friends. Oh, it's good to talk to you. My friend Adam.
Thanks. One of the things when you're bringing that up, Diana, that's really beautiful, that when you're not trying to be too clever, at least for me this is true, when I'm not trying to be too clever, my heart can open up. And then something magical happens, and you say words, you're like, oh, I didn't know I knew that. I mean, you seem like, oh, that's a kind of wise person right there. I don't know who he is. So I don't pretend to be an example of grace or any of these or the qualities of assurance that you were bringing up, Angelica. But I do have a story. And so many of you know that we have a motorhome, a little motorhome. We sold our house, our last house. Heather and I keep saying it'll be the last house we ever own. That's a whole other story. And from that, we have this little nest egg, and we thought, well, we'll get ourselves a place that we can move around in, and, you know, we could always live in it, worst case, if worst comes to worst. And so we have this little 23-foot. It's pretty old, but it's charming. So we took it on a trip. We spent a bunch of money to get it fixed up and took it on a trip just last week. So we were gone. We drove down through a very deserty area. Colorado's very deserty right now, so this rain here just seems to me to be a huge blessing. And I hope that the same blessing comes to the lower areas, because it's tinder dry and sad, kind of sad dust bowl kind of environment down there. But we went to the real desert, so we went to the far southwest corner and roamed around the ruins of the ancient Anasazis, the ancient peoples. And that was really a beautiful experience. And we drove back, and, you know, we had our challenges here and there with driving that thing, and it has its quirks. And on the way back, the last day, we're on the home stretch, and the home stretch just happened to be the most remote of all these places, with the exception maybe of literally the Canyon of the Ancients. This section was about 35 miles from any town of any size. So, and I was relaxing in the back, had my legs stretched out, and typing in my laptop. We record the trip in a journal, and I'm typing in the journal and thinking about oh, I'm going to get to Sunrise Ranch, and we're going to do this, and we're going to go out to dinner and see my friends, and then, oh, on Monday, you got to get prepped up for. So my mind was both on the past and in the future. And then there was a bazooka blast, which happened, which was like a missile hitting the side of the RV. And all of a sudden, there's this hole, where there wasn't a hole in the floor. There's debris flying everywhere. The sound of grinding and flapping and crashing. And I'm dropping F-bombs really, really strong at that point. And Heather's like calmly turns the wheels and goes off on this dirt road, which appeared like it's right there, like in the middle of nowhere. If it hadn't been there, I don't know what we would have done because the banks were really steep on both sides. But there was this road. She pulls off. And I'm like dropping F-bombs, looking at this hole, like what could possibly have done this? And then realize that there was a hole in, and well, I could see the tire. So boom, there's a big hole in the tire. Pressurized rubber is apparently a very powerful thing. You think rubber is bouncy. It's not in that state apparently bouncy. It's more like a bazooka shell. So I jumped out, whatever. Heard a hissing sound. I figured, well, I think all the air's out of that tire, and that was the propane. So the propane was leaking out, and went over and turned the propane off. And then I looked in the back, and there's this, all the tubes and wires are all ripped up by the rubber from the tire, and then there was the exhaust pipe, which was bent up and twisted and pointing at the propane. whatever. Got back in, and we started the process of, you know, panicking at some level. This kind of like, you know, oh, what are we going to do, and how are we going to get this fixed? And then came, you know, that's just a problem. That's just a challenge. Then came the negativity. Mm-hmm. And then you could feel it kind of moving in. And it was this kind of like, who are we going to blame for this? Because that's what happens. It's like that's our go-to place when we aren't being in the present moment. My go-to place. I mean, I feel like coming out. It's like, well, it's not me. I didn't do it. I was like, you know, the whole is like irrelevancy of it. It's not relevant. What's relevant is what are we going to do next? But that accusation, blame. It's just this cloud that's around you that you have to get through. And it just turns out, you know, that when I describe the event, I mean, there were, you know, the pieces of tile shrapnel flying around my head that missed me a few inches. You know, so you could look at this and say, you know, we could have easily blown up, set on fire. I could have been decapitated. We could have been in a place where we couldn't have pulled off. We couldn't have been in a place where our cell phones didn't. I mean, our cell phones worked. It made no sense. Because I've been there before and I never had a signal. We were in 4G, and so we're able to talk to these people on the phone to try to figure out somebody to get tow us away, and we could actually search for websites. And we're like, I can't believe this. This doesn't happen on the drive to town. It's true. There's that dead spot. So I'm not saying that in some way we hit a moment of grace, but I will say that if getting out of the clouds of the criticism and the blame and the negativity of like, oh, woe is me, now, you know, this is just the worst thing ever. And when you get out of that and you're just in the moment, you know, we were sitting in an RV, we could stretch our legs out on the bed and look out and watch the storms pass. And a friend of ours happened to be driving down from 35 miles both ways, right? Just happened to be driving down, pulled in, she chatted with us. So it was just, you know, everything, it worked out. Am I happy it happened? No. Did I learn a lesson? Well, probably, about tires. But the other lesson that I learned was about we can access the celebration of life at any time. We can say, oh, I'm happy I'm alive at any time. And it's not Pollyanna. It's a little unsophisticated maybe, but there's a beauty to that. And so I'm thankful that I have some place to come back to. I'm thankful that you're all here. And there's no end to the level of thanks if you don't get stuck in the cloud. So I will have
Katie.
Thank you.
Well, there's a quote that I wanted to start with from something I had written about fear and turning 75 and life lessons. But this, I just want to read the mantra to lead into what I'd like to talk about that everyone else has talked about so far. So the mantra is from a book called Dune, and it was the mantra of the wise women. And it's something that I have always found useful for myself when I'm in a position of feeling fearful. So this is the mantra. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. And so it felt pertinent to what we were talking about in terms of fear and stillness and coherence within when we get to that point where we're free enough, liberated enough internally to make new choices or to recognize that we're making choices about how we respond to what's happening. And what Adam just talked about was such a clear example of that. And he could have been just frozen in fear of, oh my God, look how close I came, look what happened. But he passed through that, and he allowed the fear then to continue on, and he stayed behind. And he stayed behind in that position of, well, look, I'm here. And look, there's wine.
Yeah, I forgot that part.
And look, I mean, friends appeared out of nowhere. Like, what would put them on the road at this time of day, just in the right position to see us? And so when we look at the things that have happened in our lives in retrospect, we can take that information. What happened? How did I allow myself to come through that? What did I learn that wasn't just a life lesson, but was a gut-level learning response that says, I'm now a different person. I'm not the person that went into that scenario. I'm an entirely new person that came out. And if it's true that we are constantly reforming ourselves, you know, they say every 7 years you create a new body, but in truth, we've got the billions of cells, and within that 7 years, at every instant, not even an hour, a moment, but in every instant, we are recreating ourselves as the being that we have chosen to come in this time on this planet. And so when we take all that information, that is what allows us, when we choose to go into that stillness and say, fear is the mind killer. So I let that go. I let that pass through me. And I'm an entirely different person because I allowed that to happen. And so in my stillness, in my grace, in all of those states, I constantly recreate myself. And when I do that, we know because we are one, and we are integrated, that's how I am actually changing the world. So, thank you.
Hello.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, Gary.
Did you know that in the Bible, almost every time an angel shows up to talk to a human, the first thing they say is fear not. Maybe because that's the first thing a human does when they see an angel show up out of nowhere. But there's something in us that kind of has a tendency towards going there, and yet something in the divine that's continually reminding us there's no need for that. Can anybody else hear in Adam's story have a sense that there was some sort of like angelic presence or influence and how all that played out. I have my own kind of similar story, a thing that kind of sucks, but, you know, it happened. I'm driving to Sandy's one day a few weeks back, and all of a sudden I can press on the gas, but nothing's happening. It just goes, and I'm going downhill. So I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just keep going down this hill. And then I start to see it starts to go uphill, a little spot off to the right, pull over. Pull out, no more drive or reverse or anything. The transmission went out. And some lady comes out, talks to me. I get her to, you know, we agree that it's cool if I leave my car there overnight. Magic comes, helps, and pull the car back to the ranch. And if you've ever had to pull a car that's out of transmission, you got to keep the rope real tight. Because otherwise, if it gets a little loose when he starts to go again, you get pulled and knocked. But luckily enough, it's pretty much uphill the entire way from where I was back to the ranch. And it was just one of those things where it worked out in such a way where I was like, that was really painless considering what's just happened. And that's kind of what I felt there, too. I think, you know, life happens. Bad stuff happens. Good stuff happens. It's all in the mix. And I think there's forces higher than our own conscious awareness that is helping guide things in such a way so that they're smooth and easy to the degree that they can be given whatever's happening. But we have the ultimate responsibility of regardless of what's happening, how is it that we respond to it? Our own thoughts and feelings. That's our range. We have ultimate control. You could say, you know, you made me feel this way. Nothing can make you feel something. You choose the feeling. That's the response. Or that's the stimulus that you're responding to. You know, like you can't, the thing didn't make you pissed off. You choose to get pissed off at the thing that just happened, or not, or be calm and just respond and let something else have its way. Because it's going to have its way either way. Life will. But if we're attached to having our way, then we just set up for all kinds of stress and grief and upset and letdowns and all from some comparison of the way that we think it should be versus just what happened, what is, and then who are we in that moment when is happening, whatever that is. You know, because there's really just one moment. Time's kind of something we seem to experience, but there's just one moment. You're always in it. And love and life and creation is in that one moment also, always, ever. It's unfolding. That's why it's always new. It's the only way it can be. And we have some opportunity to respond to that. It's good to think ahead, to make a plan, to come up with multiple plans. But in the moment, life happens. And somehow that's love unfolding. And we get to be in that experience of love unfolding if we can see through the eyes of love into whatever's happening in front of us. That's one perspective. There's tons of perspectives. We could pick up and choose to look at everybody and everything and ourselves through. But do you respect other people? Do you respect yourself? Do you respect life? For that word indeed means re, to do again, spect, to see. So respect is to see again, the willingness to look again from another perspective. There's so many perspectives. There's the perspective of love, grand and holy, just holding it all. There's the perspective of another person, the perspective of, say, the hurt person that we keep inside and try to hide away from letting anyone be seen. Then there's the perspective of the divine being, whatever, being willing to see from multiple perspectives. That's a big part of understanding. It's a dynamic between mind and heart. What the mind offers is seeing, the ability to see. See from over here, see from over there, see from over here. It's the only way to get a full picture, to have a true understanding of whatever's happening. So that's what I wanted to share. Oh, I had one other thought too, actually. That was really cool. It was about Diana's thing with doing the daily review. Daily review is huge. Going back through your day's experience and harvesting the learning and growth that's available. And something about going into gratitude in that right before you go off to sleep. Because we know that the sleep time is like is subconscious territory. And waking time is conscious territory. That's at least kind of something we're taught, right? And yet in some way, this dynamic between mind and heart that makes up consciousness kind of takes on the two characteristics of conscious and subconscious. And there's different programming that you can do into your subconscious mind in that little window right before sleep where it's most open and impressionable. And you program yourself. It's just part of how it works. And then whatever gets really programmed in there just kind of seems to pop up as the reactive without choice. So that's why they say don't go to sleep when you're angry. Because you're just programming that in, that anger is going to come right back up. But if you can generate gratitude, love, appreciation for yourself, your life, and people in it right before going to sleep, that's what you're feeding into your heart. There's a lot of spirits that live in the heart. All we want to do is get more conscious and intentional about the ones we invite in and the ones we nurture. And let them be of the highest love. I'd like to invite up Uma.
Thank you all. Katie was sharing a thought that's very near and dear to me. And that is the ability that we have to look back in the past and see how something unfolded perfectly. And in that awareness, celebrate the mysteries of life and the ability for life to unfold in magical ways that we never could have planned it so well. And I find for myself that that's one of the tools to get through a tough time. When, I don't know how this is going to go. I don't know how to do this. I don't know that I can do this. But I know that that one time when it looked so hopeless, I didn't know what to do, I let go and stopped trying to figure it out, and it unfolded miraculously in a beautiful creation that I couldn't have figured out despite my best attempts. And I think in a way, not only is that a gift we have to provide for ourselves, we get to provide that gift for other people. And it's a beautiful thing when you know somebody well enough to know some of those times for them that it worked out so beautifully. You remember that time that you just knew you weren't going to get through that ending of a relationship or whatever? And, you know, later you could laugh about it and the beauty of how perfect it was that person came into your life and all the gifts that you learned and received from them and how everything opened up for you after that relationship. And you could see the beauty of having called that relationship in for a reason on a soul level. There's also something to be thankful for in being older, because there's many more of those things that have happened. So you can focus on being older, all the aches and pains that you have, because truly, if you've been living a really full life, you probably have old injuries that just don't quite go away. The weather changes or whatever, and oh yeah, there's that piece of metal in my jaw from when I broke it falling down the waterfall. And, you know, they're just like all over your body, you know, before you know it. And, you know, you can focus on those, or you can focus on the hurts and the pains that have caused your heart to want to shut down. But truly, if we look back, there are miracles. There's love. There's understanding. There's the perfection of learning things, sometimes in the hardest way, but then the ability to get past the hurt and only be in celebration of the learning and only be in celebration of the opportunity that that was. I've shared many times about my daughter's death. My daughter, she died in June, but her birthday is very, very close to Thanksgiving, and some years it falls on Thanksgiving. And my other daughter and I have often shared this common experience of not thinking much about sort of the anniversary of her death, but always at her birthday time and at Thanksgiving time, because that's what's present when we think about Rachel, is we don't think about anymore the pain and the loss. We think about the miraculous beauty that of her spirit that still is, not only was, but that we had the opportunity to have her in our life as a daughter and as a sister and as a beautiful friend, and the miraculousness of who she was in her short 23 years of life. And the amazing miracle that gratitude itself is, as many people have spoken to and as we've been speaking to for weeks, how it can shift things so completely. Another thing for me that's an amazing tool, well, first of all, I just want to finish that thought about looking back and seeing those times that that's happened. Yes, it brings gratitude, but it also, I believe, and I feel certain everybody's had this experience, it magnifies our ability to allow miracles to come again. Because when you focus on something, you magnify its ability to show up again and again and again. And so when we're focusing on, look at all the times it worked out, despite how hopeless it looked, it'll happen again and again and again and again. And if you're focused on the pain of it all, or how the, you know, your the hopelessness and the despair, it somehow doesn't quite come through in the same way. Those miracles can't get through. The other tool that comes up for me in this conversation is about presence. First of all, when we're trying to bring love to a situation, I think that one of the first opportunities to love is being fully present. Because by our presence, fully being present with another person in another circumstance, love automatically comes through in our true presence. It's just there, even if we don't say anything or do anything. And the same thing is true with understanding. You know, we can be with a person bringing understanding that's calming, that has a calming influence, and not ever say a word, not ever do a thing, but just be fully present with them. I have a friend that many years ago, his fiance, who, you know, he had already built a really tightly knit life with. They had been together for years, and they shared a home, and they were raising their kids together, and of course, planning to get married. They were fiancés. And she was young, and she was healthy, beautiful, amazing woman. And just like that, laying on the sofa resting, she had a heart attack and a stroke, and she went into a coma. And it was so shocking for him. He was so devastated. And, of course, the kids were so devastated, and nobody knows how to deal with something like that. But he had a long, long time friend back from his biker days who lived in another state quite a ways away. And his friend Ed, as soon as he heard the news, he went into the office and he said, "I'm leaving the state to be with my friend. When are you going to come back?" "I do not know." "Well, how can we keep your job open for you?" "Well, don't. I don't know. I know what I have to do is I have to be with my friend. And I'll keep you updated when I know more, if I know more. But I understand you got to do what you got to do. And I'm not asking you to do anything to disrupt the flow at work and keep my job for me." And then He spoke to his wife, and he said the same thing to her, and she said, "But when are you coming back?" "I don't know. I have to be with my friend." Ed is an amazing, beautiful man, a very spiritual man, and he has a very quiet, calm presence. Doesn't say much. And so my friend shared with me that when Ed showed up, he just showed up, he's got his bags, and my friend's like, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm here with you, man." He dropped the bags, moved in, you know, just took over the place, started dealing with the kids, started dealing with the bills, you know, dealing with the phone calls, whatever had to happen, so that my friend could spend day after day after day being with his beloved in the hospital while she was in a coma. And in the midst of all that, what struck him most, looking back on the experience, is, you know, Ed hardly ever said a word. And many times, we would sit in the same room together for an hour, hour and a half, and neither one of us say a word. But I knew that I was loved by God and the universe, and I knew that I would get through this. And I knew that I was everything that was needed to get through this and be there for the kids and to be there for her, to do all the right things. I believed in me because there was my friend sitting next to me, just being with me. So I think sometimes, you know, when a friend is struggling with something, we try to find the right words to say. We try to find what can we do. And that's beautiful. And there are often so many things that we can do for somebody in a crisis like that, particularly if we're perceptive and we don't wait to be asked, but we can see what's needed. But also, all of that pales in comparison to just being there present with them in love and believing in them, even if we don't speak it, just believing. And then if you speak it and you say, "I know you can get through this, and I know you don't know how that is right now, but I know you can and will get through this, and I'm here for you no matter what." My granddaughter Eden has an ability to bring a presence like that. She doesn't often not say any words, but I can remember, I was thinking as we were sharing upstairs in service prep time, Eden was probably like 4 or 5 years old, and she used to do this thing. I'd have a hard day or be struggling with something, and you know, she may or may not actually even know what's happening, but she could feel it. She's very sensitive, and she could feel it. And out of the blue, she'd open her arms and say, "Come on, Nani, put your head right here." And I mean, you know, Eden's tiny. At 4 or 5, you can imagine, you know. "Put your head right here." And I'd put my head on her chest, and she'd just throw her arms around me. And it's that kind of thing that's so simple. And it provides so much that we can always do for each other. And in that space, in that calm space of just bringing love and presence, all the rest of it we can figure out. There's something more to say or something more to do. It doesn't come from knowing ahead of time how to handle things like that. It just comes from opening our hearts and opening our minds, and then we're able to be with another person in a way that's calming and brings love and brings all that's needed to support them. So I would like to invite anybody who would like to share from this space. It can be your own experience. It can be a thoughts that you have about it. How do you get through things like that? What works for you? And we have about 10 minutes or so. And so, you know, speak a little or speak a lot, whatever. I just trust that it'll all unfold perfectly. But please come up here to speak so we can all hear you and be with you.
I want to go back to what Diana was talking about, the morning and evening sanctification, which Gary also mentioned. And so when I was in FSE in 2016, we had a thing called, The Deepening, and we had Art of Living. Well, anyway, one of those, they introduced this concept, and I thought it was brilliant. I thought, that is such a good idea to feed your mind with really good things first thing in the morning and last thing before you go to bed. But that language was really ancient biblical, couldn't relate to it at all. The language was hard for me to get past, but the idea was wonderful. So I have edited it at least 3 times, and in fact, just this week I'm in the process of going through it again to just put it in my own words. What do I actually mean by these concepts that are putting me to sleep at night and waking me up in the morning? What is the best way for me to go to sleep at night? And what is the best way for me to wake up in the morning? What are those great thoughts? So anyway, I'm going to read you my latest version from about 8 or 9 months ago. And like I said, I'm editing it right now. But this is the evening one. I shared the morning one a couple of times, but this is the evening one. Thank you, Universal Being, for flowing in my life today. Thank you for embodying me with your amazing presence. Thank you for animating me with life energy and for giving me access to the wisdom of the universe. Thank you for the intelligence built into my physical body, which carries me over the terrain of evolution as I travel through this cosmic adventure. Thank you for giving me responsibilities here on Earth so that I can contribute to whatever comes before me that is lined up with goodness, truth, and beauty. As I look over my day and let go of it, my body and mind are being cleared of stress so that I can relax, and I'm able to forgive others and myself for any slights that may have happened during the day. As I'm getting ready to sleep, I'm looking forward to the dream state I will fall into. Thank you for the systems set up in my brain to clean up the day's debris. I'm so glad that these processes allow me to wake up refreshed and re-energized in the morning. Thank you for shining through me today and for filling me with your creative energy and awareness so that I can play my part in this cosmic adventure.
Well, I was reminded of something that Hillary Clinton said when she was in the election. She referred to the supporters of Donald Trump as a basket of deplorables. But I felt tonight we were treated with a basket of adorables. I mean, really, it was so beautiful. And, you know, I have this T-shirt that says, and I very seldom wear it, it says, "Patience, I'm still under construction." And on the back of it, it says, "In case of accidental earthly orientation, call headquarters and induce spiritual expression." And I was thinking, as Adam was relating his, I think there were a few moments of accidental earthly orientation there, a little bit of panic reaction maybe. But you had the sense to call headquarters, and you induced spiritual expression, I suppose you could say. You accessed grace. You accessed assurance. You accessed love, and all was well. And I've had that experience quite often in the mailroom. Occasional panic reaction when my mail processing equipment is not working properly, and I can't get a package through. And one day, 9 packages were waiting to be mailed, and nothing was working. And I felt like running out of the mailroom screaming. But I had the sense to induce spiritual expression, call headquarters, which in this case was Tashina Torres. She knows the equipment better than I do. She came down and fixed it all, and I ended up having a glorious experience and a wonderful opportunity to share friendship with her. It all works out. Yeah. So let it work, people.
Hi, adorables. Thank you, Jerry. Yeah, I was just thinking that sometimes we really don't know how we're going to get through circumstances, and or what what we actually ought to be doing in the middle of it. And we may take the right road or we may take the wrong road. After a while, it really doesn't matter. Something's come through anyway. I was thinking of your story, Uma, about, was it Ed was the name of the man, who in his quietness apparently did the right thing. We don't know what turmoil might have been going on in his mind. Am I doing the right thing? Is this what I should be doing? You know, whatever. It just, you move through it. Anyway, Adam's story of the breakdown never had anything quite that spectacular, but it reminded me of a time many, many years ago when we had class. We used to have classes here, and one of the trainings in the class was usually two at a time would come along. It often fell to me to drive them to one of the local universities. We had meetings set up in four or five of the universities. Well, there are four close. The furthest was Colorado Springs, would be the fifth one. Anyway, to have them speak there to whoever gathered for the meeting. Sometimes nobody, sometimes a few, sometimes a hundred. You never know. This one day we headed out, and I knew it was getting a little stormy, but by the time we were heading for Greeley, the university in Greeley that evening, and at the van in those days, we could take about a dozen people in the van. So I was driving along, everybody was chattering away in the back. I don't think anybody in the van other than me knew what was happening. The storm blew up as we were heading for Greeley. Just outside Loveland, we were traveling straight down the highway, and then we weren't traveling straight down the highway, we were traveling sideways down the highway, which can happen on ice. You suddenly find you have absolutely no control over the vehicle. Oops, what's going to happen? And just in the median there, you know, deep median between the east and west part of the road, but there appeared this driveway across. So I headed for that, gunned it, and I swear I could see the whites of the eyes of the fella coming up from Greeley on the other side of the road. We just missed him, of course, and got on to the... And we were headed back to Loveland. And I think somebody in the back said, what's happening? I said, well, we were heading to Greeley, but it looks like we're heading back to Loveland. And in that moment, there was the decision, you know, what do I do? I could... just pull around and try again. I doubt if anybody's going to be at that meeting tonight. It's all right. So we just headed back to the ranch. Simple story. And it didn't really matter, in a sense. It was too bad for the two who were going to speak that. I think I roped them into speaking another night. But they had the experience of... moving. So one doesn't know, and you just flow with it, I guess. Go where the bus is going.
Hi.
Hi.
So I was thinking of this idea of assurance, and it made me think of surrender, because you kind of have to. And it got me thinking about this experience I had when I was, I think it was 7. My dad took us to Erie, and they do ice races. I don't know if any of you guys have ever gone, but they do these ice races every year where they, like, drive cars on the ice. Well, we went, and the ice wasn't quite thick enough for them to drive cars on. So we were hanging out waiting to see, is the temperature going to drop enough, or are we going to be able to do it in the evening? And so my brother and I, who is a year and a half older than I, we're playing around on these little ponds around the main lake. And I fell through the ice. Mm. And the funny thing about it is the entire time I'm in the ice, it's very painful when you fall through the ice. It's like knives. It's supposedly terrifying. And this whole time, I'm just holding on the very edge of my fingertips and my face barely above the water. And I had absolute assurance that somebody was going to come get me out of this water. And lo and behold, a couple minutes later, my dad shows up and pulls me out of the water by my hair and my wrist, because that's all he could grab, and dried me off and got me warm and gave me hot cocoa. But of course, he was a mess about it. He was terrified, and I could not for the life of me figure out why he was scared. and it wasn't until like many years later and having my own children, like realizing how horrifying that situation was. But when you were telling your story, it made me think of that. There's so many times when we don't even realize we dodge that bullet, you know? Yeah. And so I think it's a good practice, like Diana was saying, every day to just be grateful that you got to live today. Like, mm-hmm. you got to wake up today. You got to go about your day. You got to complain about the things you complained about. You got to, you know, you got to have a cup of tea, but it wasn't the kind of tea you wanted. So you're just like slightly bummed about it. But I mean, we got to be here together in this moment. And that's like the most precious gift I could ever think of. So thank you. Well, thank you all for being together in this, for sharing this special time together. And love you, everyone. Let's bring our beautiful calm presence into our world all week and just see what happens in the midst of the chaos. Love you guys. Good night.
Love to you.